You can't present a brand externally and have a different brand internally. So you can't be talking about inclusion externally and in all of your literature and all of your content, kind of showing your company in a way of what the world looks like and what we aspire to look like and to be like, and then having something opposite internally. So you kind of need to walk the talk in both those areas. And that's why I would say that rather than have it driven by the C-suite or by HR or by law or corporate social responsibility, I really see marketing as being the key influencers in that and making sure that the brand is cared for internally and externally, that we're including, we're not excluding, that we're fostering that sense of belonging, and that it's a company that your employees can be proud of, and they kind of see that adherence to the values that are so important, you know, to creating a culture of purpose and a culture of passion that's so necessary today for businesses to kind of thrive.
The smartest marketers from all walks of life, in every industry, talking about the latest trends, opportunities, and challenges. Insights from marketing executives at organizations like National Geographic, IBM, and the Baltimore Ravens. And tips from business authors and experts known around the world. Ways to improve your community's marketing, starting now, right here on the Marketing Smarts Podcast.
Marketing Smarts listeners, today we get to sit down with Kelly Walensiak, and we are talking about the power of second chances in B2B marketing. Now, Kelly Walensiak, I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it is an absolute wonderful conversation that we're having today. There are so many things that I would want to say about this conversation and about Kelly, but let me just tell you, maybe one of my favorite conversations thus far on the Marketing Smarts podcast. Now, we're going to go ahead and dive in to a conversation that is a little bit different than normal. I am going to ask questions around what keeps Kelly up around second chances, maybe even hurdles, for sure some words of wisdom. But then there's also going to be deeper layers of this podcast episode. Now, let me go ahead and just tell you a little bit about Kelly Walensiak. Kelly is the head of marketing and communications at Televerde. In this role, Kelly is responsible for developing and executing a marketing strategy and brand image that sets Televerde apart while building long-lasting customer relationships. She oversees all internal and external digital marketing, brand messaging and management, content marketing, media relations, and employee communications. Previously, Kelly spent 14 years at Avea, where she last served as global head of employee engagement and executive communications partner to the CMO, head of HR, and general counsel. I'm telling you right now, having built a career in communications that spans more than two decades, Kelly has developed a high tolerance for ambiguity, contradiction, and subtlety. She's a proven grammar stickler and wields a heavy red pen. Two traits appreciated by her colleagues and underappreciated by her closest friends and family. Kelly gives back to her community by volunteering for the Televerde Foundation in Phoenix, Arizona, and Farm Sanctuary in Watkins Glen, New York. When she isn't working, you'll find Kelly spending time with her husband, Matt, and their three children, binge-watching a Netflix true life crime series, hiking, playing tennis, and traveling. She also enjoys vegan cooking, weekends in Manhattan, and the occasional political debate. I'm going to tell you, there's no debate today. This interview on the power of second chances in B2B marketing. So let's go ahead and hear a word from our sponsor and then get into the good stuff. Hey, Marketing Smarts listeners, did you know you can automatically turn website traffic into leads with LeadPost? You work hard to drive traffic to your clients' websites, but only a fraction of those visitors convert. Now you can identify and re-engage those anonymous visitors with LeadPost. But that's not all. LeadPost can also send personalized email, social, display, and direct mail campaigns. And here's the best part. Today, agencies can get up to 1,250 credits for free with a one-month free trial. Learn more at LeadPost.com marketingsmarts.com/smart. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, Marketing Smarts listeners, the power of second chances in B2B marketing. Kelly Walensiak. Hey, you know what time it is. All right, Marketing Smarts listeners, it's your boy George B. Thomas. We're back with another episode. And of course, this one is going to get interesting. Well, if you think about second chances in your life, or maybe second chances in your business, we'll see how this conversation goes. I can't wait. But we're talking about the power of second chances in B2B marketing. And I am here with Kelly. How the heck are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing? Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Trust me, Kelly, it would be a very boring podcast if it was just me. Although I will say I've been given a lot of second chances in life and probably in business, but it would still be very boring. I always love getting experts like you on the show to ask them the questions that the listeners want to hear. Kelly, one of the things we do like to have fun, there's a couple questions in here that are specifically just to have a little bit of fun and see where they go. Maybe the myths that you'll debunk, the words of wisdom that you'll give us. But the first question that I love to ask is, what keeps you up at night? Now, pertaining to the actual conversation that we're having. So what keeps you up at night around the culture of second chances that can help businesses thrive? Like, just what gets you going there? Dream, nightmare, let us know.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think for me, and as you said, kind of given our company, Televerde, the thing that keeps me awake at night is really trying to find that balance between growing revenue and upholding our mission. At Televerde, as you kind of alluded to at the beginning, our ambition goes beyond generating profit. So our heartbeat and our core purpose is to provide incarcerated women with second chance opportunities. So these aren't words on paper. It's the driving force behind every decision that we make as a company. Yet to extend our model and to touch more lives and to bring about meaningful change on a larger scale, we have to grow our company. We're a for-profit company. I always say it's not growth for the sake of growth. It's about really making an indelible mark on society and reshaping individual futures and also the families of the women who we work with. So for me, as the head of marketing, cracking that code on revenue growth while staying true to our mission, it presents challenges, but the challenges invigorate us. It leads to a lot of collaboration, a lot of kind of research and back and forth. But always kind of driving these discussions is the importance of our purpose. So every dollar we generate, every partnership we forge, it's not a transaction. It's a testament, and I would say not only of our commitment to changing lives, but also commitment to of our customers changing lives. So while the road ahead is kind of filled with obstacles, our resolve to merge profitability with purpose, that's consistent because every milestone in revenue also marks another step towards transforming another life and granting another deserving individual of that invaluable second chance that allows them to change their own lives, change the trajectory of their future, and also their lives of their families.
Woo! My goodness. Marketing Smarts listeners, I hope you heard all the good words in that section. I mean, the idea of like profitability with passion, the fact that you mentioned mission and purpose, the fact that it was around transformative of the customers that you're serving. I'm going to be honest, Marketing Smarts listeners, that was just the first question. It might be the rewind point. I hope you had your notepad ready because many of those things that Kelly was talking about, if you're focusing in on your business with those mindsets, I'm super excited. I'm getting more excited. I feel like I'm going to get more excited with every question that I ask. But Kelly, let's keep moving forward. When we say the culture of second chances can help businesses thrive, I love to level set with these podcasts because words, I've figured this out over time that I might say something and think this, and somebody hears it, and man, they think something clear back in the back 40, like way different than I was meaning. So I want to level set. And when we say this culture of second chances, what the heck do we even mean? Just let's level set with that.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, a lot, you know, I know even kind of I've been in corporate America now almost 25 years, and we use a lot of, you know, buzzwords, what's trending, catchphrases and all that. And that's not what this is. This is more of a philosophy. So it's like a deeply rooted philosophy that really reshapes the foundations of business and society. So what do we truly mean when we say like this culture of second chances? And I think I would say it's a deliberate choice that's made by organizations to look beyond the conventional criteria that we use in selecting candidates and recognize the inherent value of individuals, especially those who come from marginalized or previously overlooked backgrounds, of which the incarcerated community is one. So these are individuals, for one reason or another, they may have faced setbacks or detours in their journey. So it's about granting them another shot, you know, really another chance to demonstrate their potential, their value, and their commitment. And, you know, I want to point out that one of the things that I've learned, I've been with Televerde now 5 years, is that the women that we work with, by and large, the overwhelming majority, they have never really been properly invested in. So, you know, they didn't come up the way I did and probably the way that you did. So there wasn't a lot of the investments made in the communities where they lived, the educational sector, family struggles. And it kind of when you don't have that opportunity and support, it does lead to bad decisions, quite frankly. These are decisions made to kind of survive, right? So that's what we mean when we talk about second chances and who we're helping. And the next question would be, right, why is this important for business? Like, why should business care? Well, the philosophy doesn't just serve a societal or a moral good. It's a strategic advantage, because I believe when we embrace a culture of second chances, businesses are unlocking really a treasure trove of talent. Having faced and overcome challenges, this talent pool comes equipped with, a unique blend of resilience, fresh perspectives, unparalleled dedication to their roles. They've experienced the taste of missed opportunities, and when you give them another shot, they're more likely to be fiercely loyal and driven to contribute. And I will tell you, the Society of Human Resources Management has done a study on that in partnership with Charles Koch Institute, and there's actually data supporting this. And I can make that available to you for your listeners. But in cultivating such a culture, businesses actually foster an ecosystem of inclusion and diversity. And it becomes an environment where everyone, irrespective of their past, feels valued and included. And this leads to higher levels of engagement. Because I think the more you include and the less that you exclude, it is a morale booster. And, you know, people feel like, wow, my company is really committed to lifting up everyone, not just some people, not just people that look like me, not just people that came from my background, but everyone. And people tend to stay at companies longer. They reduce that turnover cost. And it's also, as I said, a morale booster. So I would say by championing this culture of second chances, businesses aren't just being altruistic. They're strategically positioning themselves for greater growth, innovation, and long-term success. So it's really a win-win where businesses thrive and society progresses.
Man, I love this so much. And I think it's because partly I'm connecting with it. There was a time in my life where I literally said these words, I'm not looking for a handout, I'm looking for a hand up. And when I got that hand up, man, ooh, dedicated. Fall on the sword, carry the shield, let's go. Like, you're my ride or die, right? There's something fundamentally, psychologically that happens when you come from the places that you're talking about, Kelly. And so I love this so much as far as like why business can lean into it and harness it. And so many of the words that you're saying are just ways that, by the way, I understand we're on a B2B business podcast. But fundamentally, they're just words that you could live by and also, yes, do business by. My, not fear, not in a bad way fear, but like my hopes of maybe bridging the gap of not understanding versus understanding is somebody's listening to this and they're leaning into the like, ooh, I never had thought about that, but ooh, I'm willing to try that thing. Are there some essential elements? And by the way, I'm going to say B2B marketers because I know this is a show for B2B marketers, but I'm going to put a caveat. B2B marketers listening, this might be an episode you want to share with your boss, like share with the C-suite. It might be actually relevant to where they're at and what they're thinking about too. But what are some essential elements that marketers, business owners should be focused on when exploring this kind of new approach or strategy to second chances and types of humans that we're talking about here?
You know, I look at marketers, really, they're responsible for the care of this external brand, and they need to be equally concerned with the care of the brand internally. And I often find in businesses that there is a disconnect between that. In fact, most times, employee engagement, internal communications, it doesn't even sit in marketing. Most times you'll probably find it more in HR. And that's largely because a lot of the content that needs to be created in terms of benefits packages and compensation changes and all of that, that generally comes out of HR. So it becomes more of a focus on kind of communicating with employees about things that are necessary instead of really kind of focused on that engagement. So I think marketing is in a unique position to sort of influence these other groups in the company to kind of understand why this more inclusive approach to hiring and fostering that sense of belonging is so important. It's important externally, it's important internally, and you need to be doing both simultaneously. You can't present a brand externally and have a different brand internally. So you can't be talking about inclusion externally and in all of your literature and all of your content, kind of showing your company in a way of what the world looks like and what we aspire to look like and to be like, and then having something opposite internally. So you kind of need to walk the talk in both those areas. And that's why I would say that rather than have it driven by the C-suite or by HR or by law or corporate social responsibility, I really see marketing as being the key influencers in that and making sure that the brand is cared for internally and externally, that we're including, we're not excluding, that we're fostering that sense of belonging, and that it's a company that your employees can be proud of, and they kind of see that adherence to the values that are so important, you know, to creating a culture of purpose and a culture of passion that's so necessary today for businesses to kind of thrive.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Marketing Smarts listeners, but I feel like, Kelly, you came equipped with 2x4 moments of like life principles. They're just like, bam, let me hit him on the head with this one. When you said walk the talk and the idea of like this deeper level of marketing departments, HR departments, companies in general, cultural, all of this is amazing. I'm loving this conversation. I will use the word fear in this one. My fear is that people have a predefined notion of what second chances are. Are you looking for great curated content specific to you, the B2B marketer? Want to have fun while also learning valuable information to help you succeed on a daily basis? Then you're in luck. Look no further. This week's Marketing Smarts podcast is brought to you by the Marketing Smarts Live Show. That's right. You can join us live every Monday where we shine the spotlight on you, the community members, share fresh B2B news, several top-notch curated articles to help you be a better marketer, and of course, have tons of fun along the way. If you want even more B2B marketing education with the ability to ask questions and engage with the rest of the audience, tune in every Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern for the Marketing Smarts Live Show. You won't regret the additional B2B learning you'll be adding to your life. Now, let's get back to this episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast. Or what that means in the conversation we're having. One of the things I love to do is I love to debunk myths. Mythbusters, by the way, might just be one of my favorite shows. What is a common myth about the culture of second chances, about second chances in general, about the things that we've kind of been talking about today that you're like, I know there's some jerky in the back row that's thinking this thing right now. Like, what do you want to debunk on the Marketing Smarts podcast around this topic?
Well, what I would start out by saying is I was probably one of those jerks at one time, you know, because I think we grow up with a narrative, a societal narrative around second chances. And this narrative is reinforced by the media. It's reinforced by Hollywood. I mean, I thought, you know, prisons were Oz, Orange is the New Black. If people were there, they were supposed to be there. It was based on kind of like this fear of the people in there, that they were irredeemable, they weren't worth anything. They were just the worst that society had to offer. And then I think when you look behind the curtain and you see the people who are in there, they aren't unlike you or me. As a matter of fact, many of their crimes, they're crimes that probably many people that we know have committed, but just didn't have the same outcome. For example, maybe drinking under the influence, right? Or texting and driving. that leads to, you know, people do it every day, right? And then and just for one person, it leads to a terrible outcome, right? And then that outcome comes with a prison sentence. So when you go in there and you're meeting with these, for us, we work with women, I see women that are just like I am, you know, their moms, their daughters, their wives, they have hopes and they have dreams and they're just looking for a chance, you know, a chance to be better than that worst decision or that worst mistake that they made. What I would say is like what I, you know, in conversations with people and talking about second chances, I think that there is this lingering notion that by offering second chances, it's almost like synonymous with settling or compromising on talent and standards. And again, that's because of that societal narrative. So many believe that giving someone a second chance, we're somehow diluting the quality of our workforce or not maintaining the high bars that we set. So I'm going to set the record straight right now. And extending a second chance doesn't mean we accept less talent or potential. It's in fact the complete opposite. Those who have been given a second chance, perhaps after a misstep or a detour in their personal or professional lives, they often return to the fold with like an unmatched dedication and loyalty. They understand the value of the opportunity presented to them, and they are hungry to prove themselves. I can't remember if we're connected on LinkedIn, but I just posted something this week about working at Televerde, and I said, it's the only company in my career where I feel like an underachiever. And that's true, because these women, you know, especially as you start to get further into your career, we're always running into like, you know, not wanting to relearn or not wanting to reskill. And why do I have to learn this technology? I don't want to be bothered with AI. And for these women, it's just show me, I'll get it done. And they consume knowledge and they're that committed to your business, right? And then the other thing is they bring this kind of like rich tapestry of experience and resilience, really that have been shaped by their unique journeys. So they have perspectives shaped by a mix of setbacks and triumphs, and they become catalysts for innovation and fresh thinking in a corporate setting. So imagine the kind of problem solving and creativity that stems from somebody who's navigated life's up and downs and emerged stronger from them. So instead of viewing the culture of second chances as a compromise, I think we need to see it as it truly is. It's an opportunity. And it's an opportunity for us to tap into this reservoir of potential, drive, and diversity that can really push the boundaries of what our businesses can achieve. And in today's age where innovation and adaptability are paramount, can we really afford to overlook such a valuable talent pool? You know, I would say absolutely not. It's bad business if we do.
Kelly, I love what you're throwing down so much right now. Like, I wish this was a video podcast. It's an audio podcast, so people can't see, like, the facial expressions, the mannerisms, me leaning back, me putting my hands on my head. But this might be one of my favorite episodes that I have done on this show. I mean, Sally Hogshead was a really great episode about different is better than better. But fundamentally, the conversation that we're having today, I think, is so important to the layer of past, like the tactics and the strategies and the, man, it's so good. It's so good. Usually, by the way, speaking of tactics and strategy, this is usually where I make a funny about like, hey, I'm going to throw all the words at you. What's the tips, tricks, hacks, formula? I don't want to go in that direction. I actually want to go off the beaten path for a second, because you said something at the beginning of that. Again, it punched me in the face. You're like, I might have been one of those jerks. So the question that I want to ask, because I think that the gap I want to bridge, is how do I get people from being there to here? And so when you think about this journey that you've been on and like the mindset of like, I always call it a software update. I gave my brain a software update. Like, what did you have to update in yourself? Or what did Televerde, the company, help you upgrade in yourself that like got you to the point where we're able to have this conversation today versus being that person in the back row, arms folded, shut down, like, I don't want to hear this. Like, talk me through that a little bit.
Well, it's a good question. Came to know about Televerde when I worked for Avaya. And I was at a place in my career, I had been there 14 years, started, it was a public company. It was a private company. We went into Chapter 11. Most of the time I was in HR at that point. So I saw a lot. And I started to become a little jaded about what corporate America was about. I just did. I didn't see a lot of purpose. I knew I had kind of this talent to kind of write and contribute. And I didn't feel as though my talents were being used at that point. It seemed very mechanical, to be honest with you. Like, okay, I can write. So I would sit down and I write. And I wrote it well, but I didn't really believe in a lot of what I was writing. And I did struggle with that. And I struggled with it for a few years and kind of having conversations with my husband about, you know, what am I doing here? But, you know, you do sometimes get caught up in other things. You know, I had three young kids, college and the future, and you kind of think the only way I could have something like this is in nonprofit. And that didn't seem like the right time to make a switch with where, you know, into that with where we were in our lives. So while I was at Avaya, we had a CMO who was really focused on building up our sales funnel, and she put out an RFP, and Televerde was one of the companies that submitted a proposal, and she had actually gone out there, met with the CEO at the time, and came back. She's British and slightly different than us culturally, right? Where we tend to wear our heart on our sleeves, not really so with a lot of British people. And when she came back, she was visibly moved. So I knew she had experienced something that was really dramatic, to be honest with you. And she said, I want to tell you about what I experienced. And I need you to write a blog talking nothing about our company, but really focusing on what this company is doing to help elevate these women. And when I heard her experience and about what these women were learning, what they were capable of learning, how they were contributing, and even the thank you cards they had sent her that were all, they were so artistic and really kind of, you know, really a lot of thought in it and just the amount of gratitude that they had, I was just blown away. And she had said, I'll never forget this, she said, if our salespeople knew our products the way that these women did, we would have revenue growth quarter after quarter. And that was extraordinary. So that's when Televerde first burst on my radar. But they were a Phoenix-based company. I kind of kept tabs on them through social media and that. And it was my CMO who became the CEO and I of Televerde when the other CEO retired. And I went with her. And so what I'm telling you about all of this is that I think I was ready for kind of a shift in narrative. I was really open to it and I wanted to learn more about it. And then actually physically being able to go there and then sit in the room and meet with these women and hear their journeys. I call it a journey of transformation, and they don't dive too much into their past, but they give it to you kind of like at a high level that's still such brutally honest and just like overwhelming emotionally. You know, I always said if my mother didn't wake me up for school in the morning, I wouldn't have made it there. That's how involved my parents were in my upbringing. And then I see what all of these women have been through, the overwhelming majority of them, and that kind of lack of support for a host of reasons. And sometimes it creates patterns of drug use and alcohol use and all of that. And then to see that they're still here and kind of like fighting for this second chance, it's incredibly moving and it's inspiring and it's motivating. And there's no one who has ever left that center when we take customers or prospect or job candidates out. There is no one who ever leaves visiting those women who doesn't say, I feel as though my life is completely changed. And it is. It is a life-changing experience, but it's also a mind-changing experience because you will never look at incarceration in the same way again. And because they have this experience, we can't bring the whole world into the prison. It's just not possible. But what we've done at Televerde is this past August, we rolled out a virtual Televerde roundtable, which lives on our website. And there are 15 stories up there now where you can sit, you can click on a story, and you can just listen to the woman talk about her journey through the prison system, how their lives have changed because of the second chance opportunity, and what their future looks like now in their mind. And you'll also see some of our graduates of the program who have been out of jail, who've been out of prison either, you know, 5, 10 years. And I'm talking breaking cycles of incarceration that for some women have lasted 26 years. Tina Stein, who manages our largest customer account. So cycling in and out of corrections for 26 years. And because of this opportunity, it was what she needed to change her life. And she's been working with us now for a decade, you know, at our corporate headquarters. So when you're around that type of talent and that type of grit and that type of determination, It's everything. It's a job you can't wait to get to in the morning. And it's a job that you don't care what time you shut off at night. It's like, hey, I have to get some done, because you just constantly want to move the needle to continue providing those opportunities. Because right now, you know, it's based on the growth of our company, which is why I said at the beginning that, you know, cracking the code on that revenue growth keeps me awake at night, because I recognize that it's not about a bonus for me or, you know, hitting these numbers where people get rich or anything like that. It's about growth so that more women can be touched, their lives can be empowered, and they can reclaim their independence and re-enter society as just like, you know, community leaders and consummate business professionals and loving mothers and, you know, just all of that. You know, I've never thought I would describe work as beautiful, right? It almost seems like, come on, but that's what it is here. It's just, it's an amazing experience.
So good. I love grit, determination. Man, so many pieces of this that I feel like the listener should rewind and just like let it soak in again. That section was just filled with fantastic words, and the way that you gave us a window into your kind of personal journey of this along the way and things that were changing. I want to dive into maybe the organizational side of this for a second, because I feel like people are going to listen to this and they're like, we're motivated to make a change. We're motivated for like second chances. But what are the common hurdles or pitfalls? You mentioned journey and detour. I figured I might as well stick with the hurdles if we're going down a road. What's going to get in the way at an organizational level of people actually embracing this?
It's hard to change hearts and minds on paper. What could usually happen is you find somebody who hears about our company and is completely taken with the model and thinks this is a great idea. And then they take it back to their company. But, you know, there's a lot of people who are involved in those types of decisions, bringing a new partner on board. You have procurement, you have HR, you have law, you have the C-suite, you know, and when you're dealing with a workforce like ours, that's mostly incarcerated, there is this thinking again, that you're higher risk because of your criminal background. It's not true. As I said, Shrem and Charles Koch Institute has a lot of really good data on this, and they're getting people back to work toolkit, but it's hard to change on paper. You know, like your general counsel is kind of reviewing a contract, and their job is to protect the business from risk. And, you know, people with a criminal background are seen as a higher risk. And it's difficult. It's a challenge. The other challenge we have, I call it the dual stigma of what we face, is, you know, the stigma of incarceration, which is what we just talked about. But also, it's kind of the stigma of a for-profit company using prison labor. I think right away, the feeling is icky. Because, you know, most of the stories you hear about for-profit companies and prison labor, it's bad. The people are being used, they're not being paid properly, and all of that. And that's not how we're investing in these women. I mean, we even have a nonprofit working with us to provide additional safety nets for when our women get out of prison, when they re-enter society. That includes a career readiness and job placement program. So, you know, we're helping them get housing and providing them with financial literacy training. So our investment in these women doesn't end when they stop working for us. Many of them do, as I should say, many of them do go on to work for our corporate headquarters. But given the number of women that work for us in the prison facilities where we are, we can't hire them all. So we're always invested in them. We are invested in them for the rest of their lives. Whatever they need, we're there to support them. But I think from a company perspective, you know, evaluating us, there's also this kind of thinking that because of the prison labor, they don't want to hear from their stakeholders. They don't want to have to try to explain, well, no, this company, they're doing right by the prison that they're using. So some companies just say, we're not going to work with a company that uses prison labor. And there are a lot of them that feel that way. And what we just keep trying to do with both stigmas is just keep educating the business community on the talent within this community. And that, no, you know, there are companies, you know, exploiting prison labor, and there are companies doing right by prison labor. And what we need are more companies doing right by prison labor, because you cannot, I don't believe you can fix this mass incarceration problem and you can reverse recidivism unless you have for-profit companies, nonprofits, states, DOCs, all working together to try to solve this problem, because it's going to take all of them. because you need the for-profit companies on board to help kind of train, to help invest, to hire, to recruit, to hire, to compensate, all of that. And the for-profit companies, I mean, the nonprofit companies to continue with the upskilling and the personal and professional development and helping them resolve the issues that led them to prison. So you need that aspect. And then, of course, you need to have the DOC, correctional industries, and also, you know, all these states kind of coming together and working together. I mean, that is how you chip away and eventually solve this mass incarceration problem that's plaguing us. And it is plaguing us because I'll tell you, for us, we've had about, I want to say, well over 3,500 women graduate our program so far since 1994, which is when we first opened our doors. And nationally, the recidivism rate for 3 years is about 65%, which means 65% of people released from prison will return to prison within 3 years. When you look at the 5 year, you're going as high as 89%. At Televerde, of the women who graduated our program, our recidivism rate is 5.4%. That's significant. And these women are graduating, that's what we call it. They graduate our prison program. They have the full support of the Televerde Foundation, helping them get jobs in our workforce. And they're able to climb the career ladder and progress in their careers and meaningful work and, you know, careers that pay really good money so they can support themselves. They can support their families. Yeah, they become the breadwinners, which is important.
This has been an amazing podcast. I feel like I could have just ended it there, to be honest with you. But I'm going to be selfish because I'm going to ask one more question. And Kelly, we've all been on this journey. You know, we all learn things. And so I'm super curious around this conversation that we're having today. What are the words of wisdom? What are Kelly's words of wisdom that she would want to leave the Marketing Smarts listeners? It could be around this conversation. Could be just life in general, but what do you want to leave us with?
I would say it's time to champion the underdog. I mean, honestly, unexpected paths can lead to the most breathtaking vistas. And the unconventional, the outliers, what I've learned is they're the hidden gems of our industry. And I just think it's high time that we started embracing rather than pushing people away or discounting them or really buying into those stereotypes so strongly that we actually cause more harm. Because recidivism doesn't just affect the individual, it affects the children. And most of these women have children. That's what I would say. They're, you know, really like get behind the underdog, root for them. Like as you said earlier about, you know, not wanting handout, giving them a hand up. That's what we need to do. We need to start uplifting people, stop putting people down, you know, just really kind of have this kind of kind, compassionate, and empathetic way of doing business. And there's a ripple effect to that. Because when we do that, it helps these individuals and their families. It helps our business. But it also cleans up our communities. It strengthens our economy. It opens up more regions of the world for companies to do business in. There's just nothing but wins to come out of that. And that is what I would say. Champion the underdog.
So, Marketing Smarts listeners, did you take lots of notes? I have to ask, what is your hashtag one thing, your number one execution opportunity after this podcast? Make sure you reach out and let us know in my inbox or on X, Twitter, using the hashtag MPB2B. Also, I have to ask, are you a free member of the Marketing Profs community yet? If not, head over to mprofs.com/MP today. You won't regret the additional B2B marketing education you'll be adding to your life. Hey, listeners, we'd like it if you could leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. But we'd love it if you'd share this episode with a coworker or friend. Until we meet in the next episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast, where we talk with Kyle Roof about unraveling SEO secrets. For you, the B2B marketer, I hope you do just a couple of things. One, reach out and let us know what conversation you'd like to listen in on next. Two, focus on getting 1% better at your craft each and every day. And finally, remember to be a happy, helpful, humble B2B marketing human. And we'll see you in the next episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast.